Why wait until Friday to start your weekend?
Go ahead, start right now.
You're thirsty now, and 93.7 The Ticket is here to help you stock up.
Just in time for the weekend when I like to hit the clubs.
Time to broaden your horizons and try some new wine and beer. It's Thirsty Thursday with Kevin Meyer from Meyer's Cork and Bottle.
That's a fancy Woo! Bottle there.
Well,
it looks like a Ferrari.
That's actually the name of the winery. Remember last week when they were the text line asked, you know, what a good winery to visit would be. This is the one that I was talking about. So I thought, let's bring that wine in and we can taste it on the air so you guys can see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's a really cool looking bottle of wine.
It's called Sleek. Ferrari Carano, and the guy that founded it was a billionaire, made his money in casinos. And so the winery was like a passion project for him. And I honestly believe if he were anybody else, the wines would be double the price because they're that good. And I'm not a big Merlot guy, but I love this one. So we're going to do this first because I don't think the beer is going to set it up real nice. I brought in something that's going to knock your socks off beer-wise. So
interesting. So this Merlot, you said, should be double the price, probably given the quality. Does he keep the price down just because he's a billionaire and it's his pet project? Or is this the market saying, hey, we're just going to keep your price here, invisible hand, Adam Smith sort of stuff?
I think more the former than the latter, but he's actually since passed away. But the new owners are smart enough to, you know, realize that it was successful for a reason. And so let's not variate from that. Let's not try to fix something that isn't broken.
Understandable. Jay, give it a sip. Tell us what you think.
I like that. I had two sips before you even got me to ask the first one. While you guys were talking, I go, I like that, man. That's pretty smooth.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of times Merlot is kind of bright, can be a little tart.
Yeah.
This isn't. This has more of those dark fruits, those, you know, black cherry notes. You definitely get the vanilla in there. And it's sort of a cab drinker's Merlot. And so, right. You know, I mean, my former Twitter handle before the Russians stole it was Big Cab Guy. And now it's Big Grill Guy, but you know how it is.
Pretty distinct legs on here too.
Yes, siree. That's an indication of viscosity. It means it's got some richness to it.
See there, Austin?
Jay, you know what you're talking about.
I did.
You are an expert.
I'm not an expert. I got introduced to this. It's a funny story. I was playing in Houston. One of my best friends flew down.
Yeah.
I think it was Chris Brown's birthday party. And we went and he got hammered.
Which Chris
the
Brown?
R&B?
The kicker.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And he got hammered. My friend got hammered. He hadn't eaten any food all day because he was working, came down on a Friday. Ooh. And so we were at a wine tasting and he got hammered.
Ooh.
So I learned all about it because I was laughing at him. But I said, those legs kicked you right in the butt.
I mean, who wants to spit it out? You know, yeah. you of course, when you're tasting like 20 of them, you know, you can.
Yeah. And he a little dude too, man. So he.
Yeah. It doesn't take much. It really doesn't. You know, especially when you're talking, you know, a good dry red wine is typically around, you know, 14.5% alcohol. And so, you know, if you're tasting like 20 of them and a couple samples of ounces a piece, it can add up quick. But this is probably my overall favorite Sonoma winery. And what's interesting is normally a winery, they'll have two or three wines that are sort of their flagships, and then they'll have three or four others that they do, but aren't, you know, they're just sort of average. And so we usually just carry the flagships. But in this case, we carry the Cab, the Merlot, the Pinot Noir, the Sauvignon Blanc, or they call it Fumé Blanc, which is a fun story, by the way. Their Chardonnay, and then they make an Italian blend called Siena that actually has some Sangiovese in it, which you don't see a lot of California Sangiovese. But the term Fumé Blanc is something that Robert Mondavi came up with in the 80s when...
And Robert Mondavi is a name that you should know if you're a wienophile.
Yeah. Wienophile.
Enophile?
Enophile. Yeah. I mean, a wienophile is a completely different thing.
Enophile. My bad.
And
spoonerizing over here.
So there was, at the time, Sauvignon Blanc was held in lesser regard as far as a white wine. Kind of Chardonnay is not even its bastard stepbrother. It's even its illegitimate cousin. And he felt like he was growing some of the best Sauvignon Blanc in Napa Valley. And so he stole the term Fumé from a wine out of the Loire Valley called Pouilly Fumé. And Pouilly Fumé is Sauvignon Blanc. It means smoke because the fog settles into the valley every night. And then once the sun gets high enough, it lifts. And so they call the wine Pouilly Fumé. And so he called it Fumé Blanc, even though it was just Sauvignon Blanc. And people went, wow, this is cool and different and unique. And it sold. So, you know, besides being an expert winemaker, he's Robert Mondavi is also a master manipulator of the market, too.
I like that. This is really good. I'm getting something. Is it black cherry? Maybe a little vanilla, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's kind of a cab drinker's Merlot. And those are typically flavors that you would get out of more of a cab than a Merlot. Like mostly, you know, darker fruits, maybe even like a little sort of plummy quality. Yeah, just velvety smooth and like drinking silk. And so like anything off the grill that you would normally do a cab with, you can do this Merlot if you want to mix it up.
I love it. Since I didn't get a chance to talk to you last week, how was Thanksgiving before we get to the beer?
Thanksgiving was excellent. We did a 2-day brine on the bird.
He did it big, Austin.
Yeah.
He's humble, but he did it big.
How I like to make it is that, so you take it out of the brine, you rinse it off, and then rub it down with olive oil, both in the cavities as well. And then I stuff it with carrot, chopped celery, carrots, apples, and onions, and heavily seasoned. And then you take an orange, you cut it in half, and you plug the top in the back, and pin it closed. And then you rub the outside of the bird in olive oil and then put a dry rub on it. And my dry rub is just sort of something different every time. I've got a whole collection. Proprietary. Yeah. So I've got a whole bunch of different rubs and I'll just mix them together. Obviously I taste it before I put it on and then just generously rub that on the bird. And then, went about 3 hours in the Traeger first and then, pulled it, put it in a bag and finished it off in the oven to catch all the juice and then carve that in the drippings. And, man, it was good. And it was, I mean, the white meat was even very juicy. So, and stayed that way.
How'd the cranberry sauce go over?
I didn't do the cranberry sauce.
You did do the cranberry sauce this year?
I didn't. I figured, whoa. I've kind of come to the realization that I'm the only one that likes it. So it's kind of like, but Uncle Kev's haters. Homemade cranberry sauce, real cranberries, and you boil it in a Belgian raspberry beer. And it's called framboise. And you add a little sugar. You grate a little orange zest. And you just boil that until it turns into almost like a jello. And those cranberries pop, and man, it's delicious.
Maybe next year you can make it for the three of us.
I will. Absolutely.
Because someone needs to appreciate the hard work that you put in to make something you enjoy.
Well, absolutely. You know, and I for the life of me, can't figure out why other people don't like it. But, you know, it is what it is.
How dare you don't like what I like. You know what I mean? Yeah. I like cranberry sauce, though.
I'm like, man, I have good taste, I think. Matt, maybe not. Who knows?
To each their own or something like that. You should get yourself down to Meyer's Cork and Bottle, 13th and South. Kevin Meyer of the eponymous store is in here with us. All right. I have my socks on. They are prepared to fly off. Why are my socks coming off next,
Kevin? Okay. Well, this is an 11.7% stout.
Dang. Woo!
And it comes from Founders, which is out of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Sticking with Michigan drama. And it's what they call their CBS, which stands for Canadian Breakfast Stout. And the reason that they call it that is because they take their Kentucky Breakfast Stout, which is a stout brewed with oatmeal, cocoa nibs, and coffee, and then put in bourbon barrels.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, what they do is that this beer, the barrels had bourbon in them. They bottled the bourbon. Then they put Canadian maple syrup in it, in the bourbon barrels. And then they bottled the maple syrup and then put the beer in the maple syrup bourbon barrels. And it's dark, it's rich, it's going to be sweet, and it's going to knock your socks off.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Wow.
It's like drinking espresso.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I did not know what to expect. It was not that. In a good way.
Keep going. Definitely taste the coffee for sure.
It's like dark like Guinness.
It is. It's almost black. Yeah.
Wow.
You can taste the sweetness.
Definitely Austin over there.
Wow.
I was telling you. Your socks are laying in the corner.
Wow, sorry for the smell. I tried to deodorize it. Anyways, that doesn't even feel like a beer in your mouth.
It's rich.
The fact that you said it's Canadian breakfast.
Stout.
Yeah, stout. That's definitely what they probably eat with their turkey bacon up there in Canada.
Yeah. So it's brewed with oatmeal, cocoa nibs, and coffee, and then put in bourbon barrels that used to have bourbon in it and then had Canadian maple syrup in it and then had the beer in it.
My mind just can't like fully wrap itself around.
It's unlike anything you've ever had, I'm sure.
It truly is. I don't know if I would have ever like picked this out of a lineup to say like, yep, this is going to be my thing.
That's Jeremy, pretty sweet.
Jeremy says he loves them, some of the CBS. I get the coffee right away. I get the cocoa. I even get a little bit of the bourbon in there, but then the maple syrup finish, It just feels like a little like heavier in your mouth.
It definitely, it's sticky.
Yeah.
Pause.
Yeah.
Super pause.
Eastrick, is that you? Is Eastrick back? Yeah. Pause.
Jay, I had to pause you, man.
Jay, what's your take on this?
I like it, man. I like it. It's sweet. It's a sweet, thick beer, though.
It's
you only need two of these, and this is your calorie count right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I imagine. I don't know what the caloric value of a 12-ounce one of these is. I doubt it even tells us, but I'm guessing it's probably like 500 or 600 calories for a 12-ounce beer.
Cow.
It's delicious, but a little bit goes a long way. I did... Some of the best beef jerky I ever made. I used a Kentucky breakfast stout, thinly sliced some. I want to say it was sirloin, but it could have been like a flank or something like that. And then marinated it in the beer with some Worcestershire, some soy, a whole bunch of spices, some hot sauce, and then went low and slow on the pellet grill. And it was the best beef jerky I ever made. And it was a beer very similar to this.
That is incredible. I am still kind of a loss for words. Looking it up online. The 11.7, 45 IBUs, I believe it.
International bitters units for those of you playing at home.
Indeed. And AI is telling me, I don't know this for a fact. I'm not finding it on Founders website, about 360 calories.
Seems low. 12. Seems
it
low.
It really does.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, Kev, what would you have this on Saturday of starting football bowl month?
Well, first of all, I'd have to share it. I don't think I could put down a full one just because it's so rich.
Right. So me and you in the garage, what are we going to chomp on with this? It's sweet. Need something spicy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We probably need like some spicy pretzels or something because we're just getting started. Right.
I think
Cajun spicy pretzels
or some jerky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd go great with the jerky. I'd actually dip the spice, like a jalapeno jerky in there.
Yeah, yeah, like it, yeah. Something really peppery would, to balance out the sweet.
Yeah, that'd be That's a nice little
or,
idea.
Yeah, or some, yeah, maybe yeah, some.
Check the temperature on Saturday.
some like spicy wings or something like that with with a good spicy dust, lemon pepper dust or something like that on there. Heck yeah.
Heck, you get those jerk chicken wings. That'll take that spiciness.
That'll cool that off quick.
Few things from our starter Heyman Jewelers text line. Chubby Rhino says he also wants in on the cranberry sauce. So we'll see
if we can start selling it, Kevin.
Yeah,
right there. Right
jar
out,
it up.
Yeah, right
out at the store.
Right at the store.
Trial run.
Requires a lot of food handlers permits and whatnot, but we could go under the table with it, like black market.
Exactly.
Smokey and the Bandit.
Just turn the big signage off.
Yeah,
if you don't advertise, you just got to know to ask for it.
Well, yeah, or like we could meet at an alternate location.
Maybe a competitor getting busted.
There you go with this underground cranberry sauce.
Right. Yeah. Eric says, "Fellas, I have a nice New York strip, baked potato, and corn on the cob on the grill tonight to celebrate 40."
Absolutely,
Eric.
Good work,
that Eric Jay.
So what you need to go with that, Eric, is a nice bottle of Ferrari Crano Merlot.
That I was just about to say that would be on it.
Yeah. Or a good bottle of Cab, but make sure you get it at Myers Cork and Bottle. These are on the shelf every day for $30. They are going to be part of our holiday wine sale, which begins next week.
Yes, tell us more about that, please.
Well, we're going to have 75, 80 different wines on sale for the holidays, and just kind of a smorgasbord of things because, you know, everyone has their own taste. So we're going to have some you know, sweeter German Rieslings. We're going to have some stuff for your holiday prime rib. We'll have some champagne and various sparkling wines. You name it, we're going to have some options on sale for the holiday wine sale starting next week.
Kevin, I wanted to ask, my bad, Austin.
You good?
That goes I'm thinking with a prime rib.
Heck yeah.
I've been watching TikTok on how to do a prime rib.
Yeah, have you ever done one before?
My family's Christmas Eve thing.
I like eating them, but I think I'm gonna do one.
Yeah, it's really not that hard.
Right. Have you seen the one where they put the salt around it?
Yeah. Mostly, what the idea of that is that the salt is an absorber.
Right.
So it's designed to bring the juice to the surface.
Because I've had one with the salt, they did it. Now they knocked it off. Right. That was the best one I ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that done. I always get a little nervous because I don't want my
blood pressure to go up. It gets into your head, right?
Yeah. And not only that, but like, you just don't want it to be like a salt bomb,
right?
You know, but if you do it right, it's not.
I probably should wait for the second one for that. Right.
but you know, if you just follow the directions and pull it off at the right temp, temp is the number one thing you got to pay attention to.
Gotcha.
Pull it off at the right temp, let it rest. You know, I think a good prime rib, medium rare, you know, again, and the fun thing about prime rib is that the outside pieces are for your medium folks.
Right.
And the closer you get to the middle, you're going to get more rare. And then, you know, in between you get your more medium rare. And so, you know, your medium rare prime rib is going to, I think you pull it off at about 125 and then it will naturally heat up to about 130, 135. The ends will be 150, 160. So, you know, you can kind of satisfy everybody.
I like that. Ferrari is going to be in the house.
And they do a killer cab. I mean, all their wines are fantastic. I think my wife and I drank our weight in their white wine here this summer, too.
They do a great job. And Kevin, let's just kind of set the scene for people. We're 2 weeks away from Christmas Day. You're putting off your shopping to the last minute. You maybe have the family members you really know down or the friends you really know down, but there's someone that you're still trying to figure out. You don't know what to get them for Christmas. What's a good option for people?
Well, obviously I think the best gift is a good bottle of wine, you know, especially for somebody like your boss who you don't think needs anything or wants anything. Or if you have that sort of someone in your life that, you know, your father-in-law that maybe doesn't have a lot of hobbies or something along those lines or again, they just have everything they need and they don't need more stuff. So the great thing about a good bottle of wine is that A, they can save it for a special occasion. It's not going to go bad. And B, it shows class, you know? And so if you wanted to impress someone, get them a good bottle of wine and we'll gift wrap it for you. And it's easy and you're on your way and you can swipe it off your list without spending a whole lot of time doing it.
Kevin, I have one question. When you open a bottle of wine, you just open that today. How long is it good for?
A red, I would say drink within 2 days if you do nothing else. Like if you don't have a pump or like we sell this gas that you can kind of, it's inert gas. It's argon, nitrogen, and CO2. And so basically not only is it inert, so it's inactive, but it's heavier than oxygen. So it displaces it so it won't continue to break the wine down. So that I've gone back a week later and the wine's still very good. But if you don't have any sort of preservation method, you're just putting the cork back in it. I'd say a red wine drink within 2 days. A white, 2 to 3 days, I guess. Okay. A white within 1 to 2. The whites will oxidize more quickly because they don't have skin contact, which is also called what?
Skin contact would be called maceration.
Exactly. And that's a natural preservative because it instills tannins into the wines.
T-A-N-N-I-N-S.
Right. Whites don't have that. Only the reds do.
Holiday wine sale, Meyer's Cork and Bottle starts when again, Uncle Kev?
It's going to start Monday.
Monday.
Yes, sir. And go all the way through New Year's.
All the way through New Year's.
Yes, sir.
Not just the Christmas holiday.
Not holidays. Just the Christmas holidays. And for our Jewish friends out there, also Hanukkah.
There we go.
Yeah. And Kwanzaa.
Yeah, awesome. All the above. He stumped on Kwanzaa.
You stumped on Kwanzaa?
I stumped on Kwanzaa. Yes, I am not stumped on Kwanzaa. Give me some of that Kwan, though, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of people got that Kwan. A lot of people losing that Kwan.
Like Sharon Moore, let's just go full circle.
Yeah, Sharoni is not no macaroni.
Well, let's spend some of that Kwan at Meyer's Cork and Bottle this holiday season. Shop local.
Is the neon back?
The neon is back.
Yes!
Yes. It's the first time I've ever gotten the neon fixed and spent less than $1,000. I'm over here just printing money.
Yeah.
Look at us go. Look at him go. Look for the neon.
Look for the neon. We're back, baby.
Take that, pigeons. You can't win.
That's right.
He's Kevin. That's Jay. I'm Austin. This has been Thirsty Thursday. As always, Uncle Kev, appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
More old school in a sec.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back in. It is old school 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Austin Norman and Jay Foreman with you. As always, our 4:30 segments brought to you by the great people at Heartland of Nebraska Windows. They're based out of Hallam, Nebraska. They offer not only free estimates, full window replacements, all vinyl triple pane windows, and lifetime warranties on everything, but also affordable prices. And they're locally and family owned. They have their own team of installers. They don't contract out. You know who you work with. Give Heartland of Nebraska Windows a call today for more information, 402-430-3852, or visit them online at heartlandofnebraskawindows.com. Again, a big thank you to Heartland of Nebraska Windows. All sorts of great stuff going on. There might be a little late in the year for you to walk out all the snow, but certainly once spring comes around, the weather gets nice, reach out to them and make sure that your windows are good to go by the time summer rolls around. That insulation is always key. Jay, a guy that insulated Nebraska in a lot of ways this year, Emmett Johnson, named an All-American, first one in far too long for the Huskers. One of the best years, really, the 2000s, I think, for a Husker running back.
Sense certainly, Amir, right?
Sense right. Amir, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the random 1,000-yard year for Divine Azigbo. But when you look at what Emmett Johnson was able to do this year, 1,451 rushing yards, top 10 in a single season in school history, most since Amir Abdullah in 2014. Rushed for over 100 yards in 8 of Nebraska's 12 regular season games, including 6 of the 9 games in conference play. 120.9 yards per game, led the Big Ten, and was 4th nationally. Also, we talked about this quite a bit at the end of last year, just seeing how Dana Holgorsen used Emmett Johnson. He actually led all FBS running backs with 46 catches and 370 yards out of the backfield. That's 1,800-plus yards from scrimmage, 2nd nationally, first among Power 4 conference players. First team All-American as a running back by Sports Illustrated. Second team All-American running back from The Athletic. Also, this is something that I found interesting, Jay. He got the all-purpose player first team All-American nod from On3 and CBSSports.com. However, the honors came certainly an All-America caliber season from Emmett Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, he made the most of his opportunity. I think just a year ago, a year and some change ago, you know, going into the last like quarter of the season, you know, he probably was a little bit frustrated and, you know, people were questioning whether he could be a Big Ten back. And then obviously he answered that times 10. And so obviously, you know, Dana Holgorsen came in and saw his skill set and Emmett kept working while he waited. And it paid off because I think the offense fit him. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he can do it all, you know, he can play in the, you know, conventional run game. help you out of the backfield. And, you know, he's a pretty consistent player. And so, you know, you couple that with, you know, they really need to lean on him at times this year to close out games or really set the pace of games. And, you know, he was able to, you know, obviously he's always been able to make guys miss, and he raised his level of play as the pressure or the, you know, the opportunity became bigger. And, you know, you couple that with, you know, pretty much leading the Big Ten in rushing for majority of the year, having big games against the best opponents at times, you know, especially with 200 yards against Iowa, you know, it's well-deserved. It's, you know, look, if you ever want to, you know, for Coach Rule and staff, if you want to sell that, look, you stay patient and you continue to work, and obviously you take advantage of your opportunities. If it's that one opportunity or opportunity, then, you know, there's Emmitt, and there's plenty of other guys that he could probably point to, but Emmitt's now being an All-American. So I think it helps Emmitt, obviously, as he tries to move on to the NFL. Then also it helps Nebraska as well as being an attractive place for running backs or offensive players or just players in general to come here and obviously earn their way.
Did it feel to you like Emmitt Johnson had an All-America caliber season?
I mean, definitely first team All Big Ten. And then if you're first team All Big Ten, you're close to being All-American. I mean, All-American is like, you know, a lot of it has to do how much they push you for it. A lot of it has to do with, you know, the other guys out there, you know what I mean, as far as running the ball. So in this year with those dynamics, as far as like the supply out there in demand and him being able to be the only offensive threat, but obviously the most consistent one. So he's been so consistent as other guys have either fell off by injury or lack of production, which is probably a byproduct of your starting quarterback getting hurt. That's the guy that you point to when you know, at times we're playing in some big games. You got to think what really helped him is, you know, the Minnesota game, he didn't get a lot of opportunities, but he still was effective. Then you go to Penn State, you're obviously very effective in that game. And then Iowa, when you're essentially, you know, I call it a mini bowl game where you're the first one on the day after Thanksgiving and you hit him up for, you know, 200 yards and 160 or 70 or something like that in the first half.
Yeah.
But you just, so the timing and everything was right and you produced.
It's just so interesting to think about the feel of the year for Emmitt Johnson, because at the start of the year, maybe came in a little underrated, answering some of the questions, like you said, really developed into Nebraska's workhorse back. Jay, I feel like it's certainly a well-deserved honor for Emmitt Johnson. It's really hard to argue with it. I mean, the numbers absolutely speak for themselves. I think even if you think of it through the lens of where would Nebraska be without Emmitt Johnson compared to where would Notre Dame be without Jeremiah Love, a guy that was ahead of him? Where would Missouri be without Ahmad Hardy? You know, I think Emmitt Johnson's probably just as valuable, if not even more valuable, to his specific team in that context. And I don't know if people would factor that in. Where I think to me it would have maybe felt like more of a slam dunk, no doubt, All-America type of year, to where, oh yeah, I mean, it was just a matter of time till we got this announcement, more so than, oh hey, that's pretty cool for Emmitt Johnson, is if he would have returned to school and had this year and maybe even slightly better next year. Think about the year that Namir Abdullah was All-American. Well, then he comes back and he's even better.
Yeah.
You know, it's, or the next year he is better and earns the All-America honors, where Emmitt Johnson had a fantastic year. But to me, maybe it's because Nebraska's team success wasn't necessarily commensurate with what you think of from an All-America leading a team, you know, to the precipice of the college football playoff, or a guy that can single-handedly carry Nebraska. Emmitt Johnson did at times, but because Nebraska's team success wasn't there, maybe I knock the season that Emmitt Johnson had from that regard, which is not fair to him. The numbers speak for themselves. Yeah. I mean, he did something that hadn't been done since Saquon Barkley, according to Nebraska's release. He's just the seventh player in the Big Ten since 1956 to have 1,400 rushing yards and 350 receiving yards. It's Emmitt and Saquon Barkley, the only Big Ten players to do that in the last 20 years. I can't hold Nebraska's, you know, narratives and expectations against Emmitt Johnson, because he did everything Nebraska asked him to do and probably more.
Yeah, I mean, you can't hold it. I mean, he was productive, period. And so generally when you think when you have All-American and or what Nebraska used to be accustomed to prior to even Amir, is that when you're an All-American, you're essentially in a national title hunt. That's where people are kind of – but that's been happening all the time. You have a guy that, you know, like, okay, so back when I played, you know, there was a receiver from Wyoming that I actually – you know, grew up playing basketball and football with named Marcus Harris. He was All-American, but he was at Wyoming. He was so dominant, even when they played like Nebraska and everybody else, he was an All-American. That's kind of where Emmitt's at, you know, where he's very dominant or very productive and very consistent. And then he became an All-American. So I think that's where people are like, okay, if we have an All-American running back, then we should have, you know, maybe be in a little bit more in the win and loss columns. But, you know, like Kupsker has a point, you know, I think it's, you know, it helped. I guess you don't want the help that that Dylan got hurt, but it did. But he's been productive anyways.
Yeah.
So maybe instead of Iowa, instead of having 220 yards, he'd have 140. That's still a very good
game. Say like 175.
Right. Or just whatever, 150 yards. Because I was still, you know, so I think he would have been productive because he's a weapon out of the backfield. He's very consistent. He made guys miss. He made a lot out of a little. You got to think even back a couple runs against Maryland where he looked like he was dead to rights. Then, it, you know, a six-yard run turns into 16. So I think the way his running style and his ability to make guys miss and, you know, at times where the offensive line, you know, blocked, it allowed him to be very productive. So either way, if you want to look at it, guys were hurt and he really took off, or you're just going to give me the respect that he was very productive and consistent throughout the whole game or the whole season. I remember after the Cincinnati game, people were like, oh, Emmitt really didn't do much. He had 25 carries for 104 yards.
Yeah.
Very workmanlike. But that became the norm. And then it lets you know that he can really tote the mail. I think he had 8 receptions, so it was 33 touches. People are like, oh, that's too much. That's too much. He seemed to get better as the season went on. I think he had 800 yards in the last month. So he really turned it on. He really finished strong.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want a guy that's being able to last. So as much questions as people had, you know, was he big enough or not? Now he's going to fight that same narrative at the next level. And he's got to remedy that. Like he's got to figure out a way to be an effective pass blocker. Because if you can't stop Jay Foreman blitzing, you ain't playing.
No.
Because nobody really runs.
Because you're not Darren Sproles.
Yes, but no, but you're not Saquon and you're not Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is a defensive end. Saquon is next level. That's your biggest weakness right now. I know, I've read the scouting reports. Can you pass block? So that's what you're going to have to remedy.
Right now, and I don't want this to be the cop-out kind of easy comparison. Is he kind of like Diet Amir Abdullah right now? Smaller back.
Probably.
Productive. Yeah. Obviously, yeah.
Probably. It was a different run game that Amir was in.
Yeah. Just in terms of like how the NFL will view him, potentially.
Potentially, yeah.
Good speed, maybe not elite speed. Sure. Tough, rarely down on first contact sort of guy. But, Jay, this is where I'll give Amir credit. Guy that found his role where? Not necessarily on offense. Amir found his role on special teams,
but
right?
He played special teams in college.
Exactly.
So that's where Amir already had the leg up, where he returned kicks and stuff like that. Obviously, you go back to what, McNeese State?
Yeah.
The punt return?
That wasn't a punt return.
What game was where you had the big return?
He had a touchdown against Fresno State on a kickoff return as a freshman.
And he had a couple big returns, you know, when they were kind of like down or whatever. So I think, you know, Amir stepped in there and the league is a lot easier to stay a little bit longer. So he's going to have to be, you know, he's going to have to run down and tackle people. This is something that he's never done before. That's the biggest adjustment for guys that don't play a lot of special teams. Rightfully so for him as an offensive player. But you're going to have to learn how to play special teams.
So, number one, I'm not going to doubt Emmitt's aptitude. I think he's a hardworking guy who will put his head down and learn to do that stuff, if that's what's going to help him stick. I mean, this guy that got better every year in college, it seems like he has a good head on his shoulders and will be certainly willing to learn. Yeah. But Jay, is the NFL in fighting for your life to earn a roster spot, is that the place that you should be learning tackling? I know that Nebraska needed Emmitt Johnson in the role they used him in, but did Nebraska only do what was best for Nebraska, not best for Emmitt Johnson, then not putting him on special teams, even as a freshman or sophomore, he wasn't on the field.
He returned some kicks at times, a couple times, and learning how to tackle. Emmitt's an overall good athlete.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll go down there and he'll very quickly learn how to tackle. Now, you got to be good.
But he's just small, like you said.
Right.
Rules and everything, does that help or hurt him?
The way that he'll play, the positions that he'll play in special teams, he's not running down there. Like, you know, I was like hitting the wedge.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be going on. Yeah. He's going to go about against the guys about his same size. He'll have to use his quickness. He's stronger than people think. You know, he might have to play on some punt team, you know, because if he's going to come in, you know, primarily as like, the change of pace back, you're going to have to add more to it unless you are so dominant there. And then, you know, he's going to have to pass. I mean, he's just going to, it's going to be a little bit of adjustment. The biggest thing for him is, you know, stay humble, right? Because right now I call it the cupcake time, the celebration time, where you're going around, whether he's here in Minnesota, everybody's telling how great you are, right? And everybody's in your ear. Now you got to really learn how to stay humble and understand that the way you got here is the way that you stick in the league. Because if you change up, you will be doing the same thing I'm doing. Now, I can do what I want. You will be at home watching and wondering.
Yeah.
Because unless you are a legitimate bona fide starter, they turn guys like that in and out of the league very quickly. That's just the way it is.
Thomas and Lincoln wants to know, Jay, whose offense do you think he could fit best in at the NFL level?
I'd say maybe Denver, just because of Sean Payton and Alvin Kamara.
Okay.
Just because now they have two backs that can do it, right? So that's where you think, like, you know, where can you get in where there's not a back that doesn't have your skill set? So that's where it gets shaky, right? Because then you weigh off, like, okay, say we have a second-year guy versus a rookie. He's still on his rookie contract. Do we want to add another rookie contract? He's already, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
New Orleans, right? Just automatically, you'd be able to learn from Alvin Kamara.
Mud Duck says San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'd be good. I mean, they got McCaffrey and they got Robinson, so you had to come in and try to beat somebody else on third. You want to go somewhere where somebody that they generally keep their draft picks. You can even say Philly, right? You know, anywhere they need a all around back, he could do well. Pittsburgh need a guy like that to make guys miss, right? Because Warren doesn't really make guys miss,
right?
They don't.
Chicago stands out.
Jackson, no, because they got Menunga, and they got Swift. Now he would be only a third down back.
I'm just saying, I think that's the type of play caller in Ben Johnson that could use.
Ben Johnson, for sure. That's you're 100% right. Washington.
Okay.
With my man, The Bachelor. Minnesota, because you got Aaron Jones. There's plenty of places. Just when do you get there? Do you get there early in the draft or you get there late? You're getting there late, it's a different mindset. You get there late, you talk about the clock on our football program. The clock on you starts as soon as you get there. So you got to outrun that clock. So it's just going to be interesting. He'll do well. He'll figure it out. Got Carolina or Buffalo. Sure. I think both of those. You want to go to where they have a back that kind of fits you, that looks like you, that plays like you. So Buffalo, Carolina has like younger backs. So you want to go somewhere where maybe a little bit long in the tooth and they need some fresh legs in there. And that's where you can come in and get a lot of reps.
A few things from the starter, Heyman Jewelers text line here, 75-43. You can't put Emmett Johnson on special teams at Nebraska. He did everything. Terrible statement saying Nebraska did him a disservice. That's why I didn't say they did. It's why I asked the question. And also, when I'm thinking special teams, I'm not putting Emmett Johnson in the shield on punt. I'm not putting Emmett Johnson on the line of scrimmage as the, you know, the wing blocker on field goal protect. I'm saying, hey, get Emmett Johnson out there on kickoff return. Even if teams kick away from him, he's at least out there, you know. And I get it. It's one extra snap. And I know they like Kenneth Williams. I know they like Isaiah Mosey, you know, in the kick return game, right? You had Ja'Cory Barney back there on punt return. Yeah. Maybe he had that locked down. But if I'm Emmett Johnson too, I'm pushing for at least splitting time back there. You know, it doesn't have to be all the time. But, hey, coach, I want to go to the next level. I know you trust me with the ball in my hands. I can take, you know, three kickoffs a game.
Yeah.
Something like that. And maybe run down on punt, because that's the other thing that stands out to me. Devontae Smith won the Heisman and played special teams.
Yeah.
Devontae Smith is a better college football player than Emmett Johnson. If he's good enough to play special teams at Alabama, you can't say you're above it. You know, and I know it's not a one-to-one example.
I think they had, you know, Jackson took off as a kickoff returner. He obviously was very good.
Yeah.
Barney was the punt returner. So there wasn't a lot of opportunities. I'm sure he practiced at it, and I'm sure he was, you know, emergency guy. So he's well trained into it. He's done it before. And you know what? Before he became in this role, he was on special teams. So he knows what he needs to do in the coverage units, and he'll have to do that. He'll have to cover kicks and all that in the preseason and during training camp. And then he's going to have to run the ball effectively. Yep. So he's going to be challenged in a different way than he has in college, but that's how you end up, you know, trying to, you know, extend your career in the NFL.
And then we get to Pecan Pie and our starter, Heyman Jewelers text line. Does Emmett Johnson really have the speed to actually stick in the league? caught too many times on long runs. JL, I'll address this first and then give you the floor. You kind of opened my eyes to this as well, where some players can create some of those big plays, but you've said at college and NFL, those big explosive long touchdowns are more a result of busts more often than anything else, is everyone, you know, not quite doing their job correctly. And instead it turns into a long run. That was one of my knocks on Emmett coming into the year, was where were those long explosive plays? Where was the time he beat the guy on the perimeter and then outran the backside safety? He actually did that a couple of times. He had more, you know, kind of Steph Curry touchdowns from long range this year. No, Emmett Johnson isn't a 4-2 guy, but he's fast. He's not slow.
It'd be interesting to see what he runs. I think he'll run like mid 4.5s. You know, if he gets to 4.4, then that's answered. Yeah. I think when people think about running backs and breakaway speed, you're thinking Chris Johnson and Saquon Barkley, right? So there's not much like that. Now, Derrick Henry at 240 some pounds, he's able to take it to the house. So it can be done. He can still get faster if he wants, or, you know, he works at it. I don't think that's a big enough knock that we're that, like, he wouldn't get drafted because of it. I think the biggest thing that fights him is, or that's going against him, is his size, which you can't change. So you're going to have to, there's been other guys that have been smaller that have been able to pass pro. And then obviously maybe a little bit of his age. But then also, you know, it's mainly just size and pass protection, and they kind of go hand in hand. So once you pass protect good, to show you that you're willing to be physical, then they won't talk about your size. You get what I'm saying? And so you do that, you'll be just fine.
91.74 Thomas and Lincoln, and then also 78.09. Appreciate your thoughts. We got to go to break. We'll wrap up hour two of Old School in just a sec.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're wrapping up hour two of Old School. Austin Orman, Jay Foreman with you. Really appreciate our friends at Love Volleyball Nebraska for their sponsorship here of our Match Point segment here, wrapping up hour two. Let's get to this very quickly from 7809. Just going to read this verbatim from the text line. Was Amira Wuss also an opt-out for bowl game? Referring to Emmett Johnson's decision to not play in
the... Amira opted out?
Well, he asked if Amira opted out. No, Amira Abdullah played against Georgia, had 122 yards. About 4.5 yards per carry, a touchdown in Nebraska's 24-19 win over Georgia in the Gator Bowl. Probably best known for Tommy Armstrong to Quincy Nunwa.
Yeah, 99 yards. Or was it 99.
Officially for that touchdown in the rain. But also, I kind of thought we were past blaming players for opting out of bowl games. I think 99% of Husker fans would have liked to have seen Emmett Johnson play one more time. I think it could have been a good opportunity for him to put some more positive game film on tape against a, like you said, a defense that's gettable for Utah, but I understand the decision. Sure, I'm bummed to not get to watch Emma Johnson play one more time. Sure, I think that puts more pressure on TJ Latif, et cetera, but come on, we can't be calling players wusses for opting out of a bowl game in 2025. We're past that. We're better than
that. Yeah, and I think the dynamics of college football is a lot different now. You got to think that Emmett's given a lot to this university and obviously done what you'd want is work while you wait. You know, a lot of carries, a lot of hits. He's got to, you know, get healed up, and the biggest thing, he's got to get his mind right. And like I said, stay humble. And, you know, for Amir, you know, I think he needed to play, you know, kind of, you know, it was a pretty good running back class, and he just cemented that against the Georgia defense. And then obviously he went to the combine and did well. So I think it's just totally different dynamic. So I don't fault him for it. You understand it. And the university and the football program was at a different spot. So he's got to try to cash in when it is, when he can, and you understand it and you respect it. And he's definitely given his all this season. So you got to, you know, dip your hat to it. Now, I'm sure if we were playing and definitely in the college football playoffs, he would played, and just definitely, and I imagine if we were playing in the New Year's,
Day, one of the Citrus Bowl, or something like that, Cotton Bowl, whatever,
where you could really use that to really take you up another level.
Yeah. So. And I'm in the boat with most Husker fans where I'd say I'm bummed that Emmett Johnson won't play in the game. I'd like to see him play in the game.
Right.
But you also have to understand it from his perspective.
The risk outweighs
the reward. And again, it's a bum, right? I hate the fact that we've gotten to that point, but it's where we are. And so I'm not going to call the young man a wuss for sitting out. I'm going to say, hey, thank you very much. Best of luck. Rooting for you the next one.
Never crossed my mind. I understand it. Now yeah. you gotta make your decision, and you gotta validate your decision. Now you gotta restart again. Now you gotta be more focused. You're gonna have you got more time on your hand once you. I'm sure he's graduated. So once you kind of turn pro, you are a pro.
So well, I guess Amir did play in the Holiday Bowl, someone's saying as well. So even that next year,
right
after that season. Okay, yeah. So perfect.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. I mean, it's just different. And once you turn pro,
either way,
you are a pro. Now you got to time manage. You got to stay out your own way. That's the hardest thing to do right now.
Yeah.
Stay out your own way. College is over now. Everybody that you see at the combine, there's guys that are going to show up at the combine that don't have the same stats or go to the same university as you that are going to creep up the draft boards.
And they're guys you've heard nothing about that are going to creep up, and they're guys that you've heard a lot about. They're going to fall for that reason, not mind their business.
Yeah, so you got to make sure you stay focused, man. Stay humble, stay hungry.
Ask underwear Olympics champion Jay Foreman.
I don't know if I was a champion.
I'm going to give you credit for it.
I don't know. I did all right, but I don't know if I was the champion. I think Joey Porter jumped like 39. I jumped 36. I had never thought anybody could get up that quick. He got up there pretty good, and he kept reminding me of it, too.
How dare he?
Yeah.
He's Jay Foreman. I'm Austin Norman. Hour 3 of Old School next.